This year is brought to you by Eshel Publications. Eshel Publications is a non-profit organization dedicated to spreading the Torah, Shiurim, and Sefarim of Rabbi Aaron Lapiansky. For sponsorships or more information, visit eshelpublications.com.
We are holding over here by Ube Medrash, I believe, or Mikne, Adam Asher Nasashim Spachor Yishir 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 Lishma, right?
I think that's what we're holding. Yeah, I think we're in this one. We are quite deep into this one.
Well, it's actually a separate piece. Even though it's not really marked off well, it's a separate piece of Adam Asher Nasashim Spachor Yishir.
Okay.
Maybe, I guess, once we've been on the topic here, on the first piece, we can actually... let's talk about a little bit of drop about in Yonah Yemi before we go weiter. It's interesting, like Boma, and it's something which, if Shem Bechoy is the Shoresh of the Inyanim of Torah, of the Schelk of Torah Sod, it's a little bit, what exactly like Boma is really mysterious in terms of. Is it his yard site? There's almost no mention of that. One place actually, it's a corrupt girsa and so on. But however you slice it, it's certainly the data chayach to him. Klal Yisrael's instincts are not wrong, and this is the day of Shem Bechoy, whether it was his yom Ptira, or Yom Simchasi. Our Masoros of like Boma starts with an Arizal, and the real gear says Yom Simchasi, and that's about as far as we know about it. Why it's Yom Simchaso? It could be because it's Ptira of Tzadikim, and there's Reb Tzadi speaks about this. Why certain Tzadikim? Is it a Simcha? Is it it's some other reason, because he was on the Talmid of Rav Akiva, and this is when they stopped dying, and then he's the beginning of Gehemshech. And the prat of exactly where and how it fits in is much less significant than this is the day that is Shaykh Reb Shem Rechoy. It's also a Mitzad the Sfiris, it's Sayyid Shabarayid, that's supposed to be the day that Shaykh Reb Shem Rechoy. I wanted, I guess, to. A little bit be omade on a certain nekuda that's, I guess, shaykh to us. The interesting part about it is that, first of all, Reb Shem Rechoy's limud was done in the Maira, which was a very self-sufficient place. The Maira itself, where he had the tree and he had the water and no clothing and buried in sand and learned the pshat. So there are different deheras in that inyan, and one of those deheras is so you just learn the sort of tzitkis, mesiras nefesh, but a lot stronger than that is the self sufficiency. In other words, he was in a mara away from the rest of the world, cut off and totally able to sustain the self. I guess similar in a sense to Lolita Torah and Lochle Mon. One of the yanim of Lochle Mon is the simplest pshat is sort of a b'china bitachin, but a deeper nekuda is that it's totally self sufficient. It doesn't require the aretz, doesn't require anything around to be able to sustain himself. He got into the Maira. So one nekuda is to try to understand a little bit about the inyan of the self-sustainment of Reb Shem Rechoy. Why is that the necessity for his Torah? A second inyan that we need to be aimed on is that the mahus of his Torah itself, the mahus of the Torah is that it was. The Mishnah says that you're not doshim barayis b'shloisha, you're not doshim b'mayis b'reishis b'shtayim. So that's pedagogic. They shouldn't talk or not concentrate and so on. And then the mayis merkava fil loy b'yachid. You can't teach mayis merkava, which is whatever the core teaching of this chelak of Torah is of Sod. even to a yachid, elam kein if it's chacham or maven meatzma. That's the Mishnah, and Rashi says you give him over the Gemara says you give him over the Rashi prakim, and that's it. So it's a rather strange way of learning it. We understand that why one should not learn this publicly. We understand why one shouldn't learn it with many people. And fine, that's all fine. But you have to be very, very careful about the Talmud you're choosing. But when you've found that Talmud and you're choosing him and you have him, so now what is he exactly like? So why can't you teach him? Well, why are you playing a game with him? Either he knows it or he doesn't know it. But what's the either he's right to teach, not right to teach? Why play a game with him? I mean, is this like part of the test, kind of? It's hard to see that. So I want to go in a little bit on the musig of sod itself. In one of the questions oft asked about sod is, can we define something as inherently being a sod? If to us, a secret is something that we're not privy to. So if I don't know some fact about you, when I don't know it, it's secret. As soon as I know it, it no longer is a secret to me. It's not. When I describe a certain idea as a secret, what I'm really describing is that I haven't let you in, I haven't let other people in on it. But there's nothing essentially secret about this thing itself. Lehoraya, as soon as you talk about it, it's known. So there's no real secret here. I don't know, the quote says, a secret is something you tell one person at a time. But Akapanim, it certainly doesn't have a... it's certainly not a description of something. So when we describe a Chelk of Torah as sowed, do we mean because we're not telling many people about it? If that's true, so if let's say very few people are learning Gemara, is that a sod? It's just, let's say you have many people that are worthy of knowing the sod, so it's not such a sod. Let's say like the door of the Arizal, where its fast was full of people that were osek in this Torah, so was it less of a sod? It's kind of hard to be oimed as a chelik of Torah. One could say this is a chelik of Torah that ought to be sodi. We could describe it as an adjective, but not as the atzmius of it. So I think the pshat's like this. When we're given the four halakim of Torah, pshat, remesh, drush, soid, so the pshat means that it is, it's what it says. That's what the words are. The remez means that the words themselves spell out more. Through the remez, I'm able to see more information in one way, and the drush also does that. So when the gemara is being done in on a halacha, and the gemara asks, how do you know it? So the Gemara says, the Gemara gives us a drush and a pasuk, which means basically that all of Torah Sheba'al Peh can be found in Torah Sheba Ksav. It's the extension of the Torah Sheba Ksav. Loimi boy, somebody like the Malbum, who actually gives extraordinary details about how the Ksav and Kabbalah, how Chazal darshan from the pasuk, where it actually is really sort of, according to the way they understand it, and according to the explanations, it's manifest in the Torah. Once you realize that what those words mean, the implications, it's like a lawyer reading a legal document. What you don't see is quite obvious to him because he knows what those words mean. The same thing in Torah. But even the others who hold, even for those who hold it's as far those sheet as that sort of mnemonic device, it still means that within Torah, it's going to be there. There's an Indian, the famous Gemara with Ulfa and Rabbi Yochanan, where Ulfa said, I dare somebody to find me a brisa that I won't find a remez in the Mishnah. So that type of Torah means that, I guess, if I need to give a mashal, it'll be as follows. You walk into a crime scene, and you scratch your head, who done it? You don't know who did it. And good old Sherlock Holmes gets down on the floor, and he searches this and searches that, and finds a thread here, and a stain there, and a hair over here. I guess this was before you had all the video cameras all over the place. You just had poor Sherlock Holmes finding some little things. He puts it together, he finds a criminal, and once we solve the problem, you go back, and all of those elusive clues are wide open. They're obvious. They're pushing. This is really what it said all along, the crime scene. It's just that we didn't have the wits to really make sense of it. That's the tzur of it. So in the chelik of Torah, that's remez and drush, that is a chelik that I may not be aware of it when I'm reading it, but once you've told it to me, then I now go back and understand and see it in Torah. Because it is there, really. It's there, it's overt, it's there, and I understand it as such. There's another chelik of Torah that even after I know it, and even after I know where the pasuk is meramis to it, I don't see it as being as drawing from that. The drush draws from the pasuk. It teases out the meaning and so on and so forth. Let's go back to that example. Let's take not a crime scene, but let's take a cipher, decoding a cipher. So you have two types. You have one type of code where really there's a pattern to it. Take every third letter, substitute it with two letters before, unless it's the fourth letter, in which case I'll substitute it with four letters ahead, and you know, on and on and on and on and on. That is a pattern, and you can once I show you the two, it's clear in the first text. You understand how the first text got to be the second text because there is a process. On the other hand, let's say I take something like a random code where every day we decide it's a new code, and I tell you. If I tell you I had borscht this morning, it means that the submarines are coming. And today, if I tell you I had oatmeal this morning, it means the warships are coming. And every day I change it. There, even after I've given you the code, and you know that borscht means submarines and oatmeal means warships, there's no process from one to the other. It's a completely random connection. And those who are privy to it, know that this is where the connection, this is what it means, but it's no inherent connection whatsoever. That's the mahalach of two mahalachim of connection between a hidden content to the overt to what's overt over there. The Torah itself contains many halakim that aren't given overtly, but can be teased out from the words, or at least once I know the halacha, I can find it in the Torah. It's going to be nirmaz over here, over there, backwards. So some shitas understand the connection of Torah itself to be that, and some understand it to be just the halachas I know from Sinai. And I find them in the Torah through Rimazim. But those Rimazim are valuable because we're able to use them a little further. That's the value of having all those drashas and so on. There's another chelik of Torah that even after I understand it, I don't, and even after I know where the pasuk contains that secret, I don't see the process. It's not. If I'm not privy to the information, it's not something that could possibly be processed. There's no way to draw up the Malbum's type of explanation of which words means which sod. There's another chelik of Torah that's sod, And it is in and we know we might know which pasuk is meramis for the sod, but that remez is not coming from it. It's advantages. What was it? Advantage, but it means that it doesn't need to draw on the chitzonius of Torah for its validity. The other halakim of Torah, drush and remez, need to keep its validity rests on the connection of the chitzonius of Torah. This is something which really exists because it exists on its own, and yet it was put together it was attached to Torah. It was given to us as the content of Torah, but not connected to the individual places. The Gemara says that Reb Shimon told his Talmidim, "Shnu midaisai, learn what I have to teach, because my middos are the trumiest midas midaisa of Reb Akiva." In other words, I'm the one who was able to capture the essence of Rabbi Akiva's limud. So it's on Rabbi Akiva's limud, it says that Moshe Rabbeinu asked HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as HaKadosh Baruch Hu was giving him the Torah, he saw the tagin on the oisius. And Moshe asked him, "Mima akiva yotcha?" Like, who is this going to be helping these tagging? So it says that he told him somebody named Akiva Yosef is going to come and he's going to be kashik sorim for Torah. And he asked him Hareni and the whole Gemara Nas. The halakim of Torah, you have the physical letters, and those obviously give us the block information. You have the nikud, which gives the final definition to the words. You have the trop, which are very significant in making sense of it, because the trop tell us how to pass the paragraph. Actually, the only thing that exists in the Torah written is a paragraph. How to pass the paragraph, the sentences, sub-sentences, phrases, etc., etc. And then you have tagin that don't do anything. The tagin are not of any special function that we're aware of. And it's not part of the letter, it's called tagin. It's zinnin. It's these are crowns to the letter. And but there's no way to translate into any language what it is that the tagin, how it is, I should say, that the tagin teaches something. And Moshe Rabbeinu asked him, who is it that will do it? And he said, Akiva Yosef. So that means there's a chelik of Torah that in a certain sense is the crown of Torah, and it's not yonik at all from the Torah. It's not yonik from the existing letters. It's adding something to the letters. Whereas drush means I tease out of the letters, out of the words that exist, I tease out some meaning. This means it's the other way around. There's some crowning piece on top of it that's beyond it. That's what the Kisra Isis are. If we can use a mashal just so that we can understand the concept of a keser, that we see as a crown. So besides the fact that it sits on top, which is where a crown sits, everything that a person wears fits the person in the sense a person wears a garment to cover him, to keep him warm, to keep him dry. That's what garments are all about. They are for the body. They complement the body. Their validity, a suit, is something that needs a body be'etzem to have a shem suit. A suit that fits nobody is no longer a suit. A crown is very different. A crown really confers on the person an attribute that's beyond the person. It's monarchy, royalty, that's conferred onto the person. It's not coming to address a need of the person. It's not serving the person. It's bestowing something from somewhere else. It's bestowing it's being moishech some element onto the person, and that's why the crown jewels are crown jewels. When they rest in a museum, this is the crown. It's a crown when it's rest in a museum. Also, a suit of a king that died is not really much. I mean, it might be interesting for people to see, but it's gone. The body doesn't need any suit anymore. But the crown is the crown is England. The crown is the monarchy of England, of Holland, or whatever it is. So it's a very, very different type of relationship. It's not of the person. It's to the person. It is beyond the person. It attaches itself to the person. So the chelik of Torah that's called ksarim to the oisius means
HaKadosh. Yes. Excuse me, Lobianski. Why is it that the Gemara of Menachos describes as halachas that Rabbi Akiva is darshaning from these?
So the process starts. It says over there, tilei tilei halachas. So the process, Torah Shabbal Peh, is sort of the bridge. If you needed to outline, you have Moshe Rabbeinu, which is the Zeis HaTorah Shasom Moshe Yisrael, the physical letters. It is Rabbi Akiva who darshens the Torah Shabbal Peh, which is already one step removed, and the Trumas Trumosai of Reb Shimei Choy is the part that's even further detached. In other words, so you're right. Rabbi Akiva's process was halachas. The Gemara prior in Chagiga says that there are certain halachas that are, there are certain passion Torah that the Iker is the psukim, and some of them are harorim atluyim besaros, big mountains attached by flimsy little strings, and some of them are like just hanging in and have nothing on Malay Shoya. You have a similar process. The start of that process is Rabbi Akiva, and you're right, Rabbi Akiva, it was halachis, and that process was, for instance, in halacha also, there are some halachas that are, the logic of it from the pasuk is clear, and any bezdin, any sanhedrin could have simply said, if we look into the parasha well enough, it's by implication there. And some things, if you don't have halacha moshe mesinai, if you don't have it, you know, in the room is the pasuk, you'd never be able to do it that way. But we know, so this is sort of a mid station between those two inyanim. So the chelak of Seirin Torah, and let's try to explain it. The chelak of Seirin Torah needs to be a chelak that doesn't draw from the rest of it. It's in a sense, it doesn't stand on everything else. It sits on top of everything else. If I'm carrying, let's take a marshal. If you ever see those pictures of ladies in Africa carrying on their heads like these big jugs of water, wine, barrels, whatever it is, the head is what's carrying the barrel or the jug, whatever it is. A crown on top of a head, it's not the head supporting the crown, it is the crown. Hello? Are we on?
Yeah, we are.
Okay, I just heard some sort of mysterious. On the crown, it's something which is the other way around. The crown is bestowing royalty to the head. It's not the head is supporting the crown, but rather the crown, so to speak, is supporting the head in a certain sense. That's the chelik of Torah that's called Soid, is something which does not have. We know it's Shaykh, we know in this pasuk we have this Soid, in this pasuk we have this Soid, in this pasuk this Soid, but it's not because it can ever be drawn out of the pasuk. It's the other way around. It's the meaning that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has placed within the pasuk. It's interesting. In a certain sense, if we're to ask ourselves, what is the difference between philosophy and Kabbalah? Some people would say this is Treif HaPikorsis and this is Kodesh Kodashim. And some people would say this is absolute mystical nonsense and this is pure reason logic. But for people who understand that both are included in Torah, what's the difference? I mean, there are more rites that are similar in different languages. What's the core difference in perspective? And the answer is like this. In the world of what we'll call philosophy or rationale of Torah, we start with this world. There's a world, there are people, there are animals, and they have needs. And they have physical needs, and they have spiritual needs, and they need to be served. And the Torah gave us a wonderful way of serving the needs of elevating, of refining them, keeping order, keeping their worst instincts at bay, making them productive, spiritual, etc., etc. So the Torah is given, cut to the size of people. That's what it is. The perspective of Kabbalah is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a world of a very spiritual world that needed to have certain tikkunim. It needed to realize itself in certain ways, needed to express itself and would be able to perfect itself, and therefore that world, this world, was given as the chetimtza for that world. So it's not the pshat that Hilchas Nida is there in order to keep marriages fresh and wonderful, and you know, abstaining is a great way to increase the love, and that's why it's good for marriages, and marriages are good for humanity, and that's why we have it. It's the other way around. There is a musig of richuk and kiruv within the world at a very fundamental level, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu expressed it, chose to express it through nidus, and that's what we find in nidus is the richuk in matzavim of kiruv, or however you say it. That's not the point. So this chachma is not simply just another part of Torah. It's a very, very different part of Torah. It's not that Torah was given to refine this world, but this world was given to reenact, to express Torah. It was given to realize Torah in a way HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants it. And whatever it is, this world is the function of the other world instead of vice versa. It's very interesting, even the story of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, how he left his, about the, you know, why he had to run to the cave in the first place. You have the machlok, there was a discussion between him, Rav Yehuda, Rav Yossi, about whether or not, how good the Romans were, how good, how bad. And you had one shita that said the Romans are great, fantastic, they do everything for everybody, for humanity. Another one said kacha kacha, and Reb Shimon said whatever they do for themselves, and that's it. And so obviously, you know, the Romans found out and they went after it. That's the story. It's really, really a very fundamental machlokas. For instance, if I look at economy in a big picture, and I say that a free market is a very, very efficient place, and I can go with that in different directions. I can say it works best for humanity. The Romans represented the core of Olam Hazeh, like Esav and Yaakov and everything that's said about it. There, and one way of looking at it is, when you develop religion, Torah stands on top of that. So they are the ones that are actually creating Dechtim Sefer Torah. In Ein Kemach Ein Torah, it starts with Kemach. And so since it starts with Kemach, one arguably may say that Torah is a function of Kemach. Just like saying if you have a society that's well-fed and a lot of economic abundance, they begin to look for all sorts of finer arts and music, and you could make a case that arts and music are a product of economic welfare and good. So that was the same Yehuda Beger's argument about that, why it is that the Romans are doing good for us. Reb Shimon Yochai's perspective was different. Anyone who starts from the bottom is doing for himself. In other words, aliba de emes. If the Romans, whatever they do, does not contain real ruchnis in itself. It's when you start with ruchnis and you ask yourself, okay, so how can I support the ruchnis? Then you have an extension of the ruchnis. The supremacy of Esav and Yaakov is goes on this nekuda. Esav's point is, once I have firm gashmistic basis, it allows for many other activities, including ruchnistic activities, and one is a product of the other. Yaakov's perspective is, one needs to start with my tachlis is ruchnis. What point? What will I need to implement it, or so on? It's something along those lines. But it's very, it has to be very clear which is a function of which. Al Kopanim, the core of Torah's Asoid is not the vocabulary or the words or the structure. It's the whole perspective of where are we coming from. Whereas one approach is, and that's why when you talk about the Maral having drawn from Kabbalah, he doesn't use any words in Kabbalah, doesn't use that terminology, but the concept that the Iker, the structure is there, and this is a hechetimtze for certain realizations, is really, really the firm point of it. He doesn't start with here and say, well, how can we improve this product? It's the other way around. So I'll keep on getting back to the, I guess, where we started with Ashiras and Estapkes B'Muot. So the Indian of Estapkes B'Muot has another angle to it. Reb Shimon Yochai's being in the Maira meant if A is dependent on B, then B is always superior to A. That's the Metzius of it. And A is an outgrowth of B. The branch can never be as big or as important, for sure as important, as the root, as the stock. And Reb Shimon Yochai's Torah requires that it be self-contained. Now, when he left the Maira first time, that sense was so powerful that it threatened to destroy the world. And on that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, go back, because I want this world. In other words, there has to, in the picture that you have, there has to be a chetimtze. The shleimus of that world will only be realized when it expresses itself in this world. That's a given. The question will be, in other words, that's the only chetimtze of having the tachlis of that world. So when he came back, he was more nichele. It's also very interesting, Stam, just a semi-side point. When he came out the second time, all he saw was somebody carrying two psalmim branches. And he asked them, what's this? And they said, well, it's Shabbos now, this is going to be for Zachar, this is going to be for Shema. He said, wow, what a gewaldic world. Ah, gewaldic. I mean, it's not a terribly, one would have a hard time finding this halacha in Shabbat, or one would have a hard time of even expressing it in any real Torah. Yes, having psalmim for Shabbos is a nice thing. having one connected self and one connected shomer is very, very nice. But what's the, I mean, but that's like he was disappointed with the world because people are also saying chay shor and not chay olam. So what's the, I mean, what's the flip side of it? What did he see? And the answer is, he saw it in two myrtle branches. Zohar and Shomer expressed themselves. In other words, the mohus of Shimon's Torah is that this world has validity only when it's expressing. It's not the mitzvahs and averus per se. It's the whole hichatimtza. So if a person can find Zohar and Shomer in myrtle branches, then the world, then that's the scheme of the world. Okay, any questions? Okay, so I guess I hadn't meant to go off so long, but I could put him. So I guess what's the next week, like regular.
Rabbi Lapiansky?
Yeah.
Is what you're saying in regard to the fact that these things aren't derived from the territories of Soit, is that similar to these Hasidic Sfarim where they seemingly say things which are completely incongruous in the Pasha Pshat and the Pasuk?
Yes. I once heard from somebody, I once overheard a very interesting conversation, Balei Avodah, I mean, people my age, but they were both Balei Avodah. One of them was like a Musadika person who had gone a few times to Chassidisha, to very classic Chassidisha Tish, and had heard Divrei Musa, and the other one belonged to that Chassidus, was Slonim. And the Bal Musa told the Slonim Chassid, I really liked what the Rebbe had to say. I really feel it's a Vodadik, it's Musadik, and there's a lot of Tochen to it. But why do you need Krum Pshatim in the Pesukim to arrive at something which is true and could be spun out, you know, out of Pshat? And he replied and said he said he's thought about it, and he said he feels that it's a certain chinuch. The chinuch is, don't try to use your mind to figure these things out from the Pesukim, because you can go wrong out of that. We have a certain Mesoris. The Pesukim are there just as a remisa. And they felt that there was a certain training, a certain chinuch in that mahalach, which is makes like what you're saying. It's sort of adarabah. We're looking. We have, in terms of the diamonds, those are the Mesoris. We need to find them in a pasuk. So we lock them in a pasuk that has some catchphrase there. But we're not attempting to really learn a pasuk because you can't learn a pasuk. I think that it's an interesting perspective.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, good Shabbos. And Lag B'Omer. Okay, Kol Tov.